Tonight we have four horrifying stories that are going to be talking about from kids going off, venturing into the deep woods, and finding something that should not even belong there and what was lurking and waiting for them once they did. Then our second story is about a group of friends that were at an Airbnb in the state of California at Joshua Tree and have a possible skinwalker experience. Then third, a mother and son driving through the Appalachian Mountains catch sight of some deer-like creature, and they cannot explain what it is that they saw. And lastly, a group of friends are camping at the Algonquin backwoods and encounter something so terrifying they refuse to go back to ever camp there again. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. I was not raised in the most comfortable household. My parents were in perpetual chaos, a result of what I later found out was heavy drug use. Around the age of 15, I took long walks in the evenings after school to get away from my dysfunctional home. It was around 2003. My life back then focused on three hobbies. One was learning how to play the guitar. I brought it over to my friend Dan's house and we jammed our version of heavy metal. The second was going to the movie theaters to watch the latest horror film. The third was spending time outdoors, taking long strolls. I blasted music through my iPod and wandered the woodland near my home. It was near the end of May. The leftover frost from winter on the trunks had evaporated. The trails were viable to walk on again, and the fragrance of the pines seemed to fuel me more than a cup of coffee. The sun started to lower, and it was then I saw a tilted sign with faded lettering. I walked past it. A rusted chain-link fence circled a space that was at least a mile and a half wide. It was a theme park. There were roller coaster rails built stories high. Chunks were missing from it as though a giant had cut out pieces of it with a gargantuan knife. At the ground level sat many buildings. Some consisted of a funhouse with a chipped wooden exterior, concession stands with advertisements depicting cartoon figures from the 1920s lined the area. The one sign that seemed fresh on the property was a stern warning with the words, "No trespassing." I noticed one consistency in all the structures. Open tents, target practice circles, balloon races, and fun slides had noticeable graffiti. The paint glowed in the darkening landscape. I heard the sound of boots crunching on leaves to my immediate left. I turned in that direction and did not see anyone. Still, I ran away, unsure if it was a security guard or a crazy drifter. The next day, I told my best friend Dan about what I had seen. We had formed a sort of two-piece band in those days, even though we could not have been sloppier in sound if we tried. As I described what I encountered in his garage, he finished tuning his bass. "You're lying," he said. "No, I swear." He looked at me and his eyes widened. He leaned back and squinted as though he was trying to gaunt my level of seriousness. "Show me." We hopped in his father's 97 Plymouth Breeze and drove to a local clearing. It took us to the same spot I visited the day before. The hike to the theme park was quiet and serene. When we got there, I would have sworn the earth had reclaimed parts of it since I saw it last. "This place looks old," Dan said as he took in the surroundings. "How come we've never heard of it before?" "Tourism was heavier in this town before we were born," I said. "The owner may have lost so much money they didn't even demolish or renovate here." "They need to reopen this and make it an airsoft field or something," Dan said as he kicked a rock against the fence. We should go in. I don't think that's a good idea, I said. What if there's someone overlooking the area? Someone trailed me yesterday. Might have been a night watchman. We're faster than some fat guy who sits around all day watching Jerry Springer in a guard shack, Dan said. You're not chickening out on me, are you? I would not tolerate perception as a coward by a peer. No, I said as I scaled the fence. Luckily, there was no barbed wire at the top. I plummeted to the other side. Dan followed, and we traversed along a path with all the empty stands. One of the booths had the word hypnotist written on the front in bold lettering. Another offered psychic services. We found a small stage setup with all the weight sets, a strongman show at one time in history. We lifted one of the dumbbells out of curiosity, a prop no less than a few ounces in heaviness used to fool the audience. The Ferris wheel was easy to mistake for another decrepit building since half of it was missing. What remained stood as twisted and mangled metal. I did not see any lights on it, which made me believe the wiring to illuminate it was torn out a long time ago. On the outside barrier of the bumper car arena were two words painted in graffiti. They read, "Follow here." An arrow pointing west sat below them. "There's another one," Dan said. He pointed at a stand lined with old prizes. Stuffed animals with exposed insides facing us, their cotton innards spilling out and swayed with the wind. On the shelves was another painted direction and arrow. We came to a mutual and unspoken agreement to follow the directions. We had to see where the instructional pointers would take us. We ran to a drain pipe with the words, "Feed him," which had an arrow that led to the edge of the perimeter. The spot we found looked to be a mine or a cave's opening. "It looks dark," I said. "Don't be a wuss," Dan said as he slapped me on the back. "I'll go first to make you feel better, wimp." We walked 30 feet in. There were no stalagmites. It did not feel as though nature had designed it. I slipped on something wet. When I hit the ground, the ceiling collapsed and blocked the opening we had walked through. Something snarled in the darkness. A set of crimson eyes made of fire gazed at us 15 feet away. The luminescence of its stare highlighted vicious tendrils of saliva. A set of sharp fangs revealed itself. A sense of terror filled my body. "Grab a rock," Dan said as he crouched to get a hold of one. I followed suit and fumbled around in the darkness for a heavy and jagged piece of stone. I settled on one which was 2 times bigger than my hand. We saw the set of eyes and the dangerous teeth move towards us. My heart pounded in my chest, sweat beaded down my forehead. "Now," Dan said. He hoisted the rock above his head and slammed it down in the center between the set of red and orange eyes. The creature, whether it was a wolf, mountain lion, or bear, staggered back for a few seconds. Then it lunged. Dan unleashed a shriek of pain. It was unusual to hear him release such a blood-curdling cry. I sprinted behind the thing, leaping onto its back and slamming my rock down onto the topmost part of its skull. The feel of the impact was twofold. At first, it was crunchy, as though I was trying to break a hard block of wood. The second was squishy as it pierced through the brain matter. The animal let loose a whimper which almost made me feel guilty. It staggered away. With our nemesis in flight mode, I grabbed Daniel's hand and heaved him onto my shoulders. "Let's go back to the entrance," I said. "I'm going to need your help moving that rubble aside. There's no point in going in deeper and hoping for some kind of way out." we passed the creature again, and it made its way back towards us. We threw rocks at it. The thing sprinted deeper into the infernal place of coldness and blackness. We scraped and lifted our way out of there. It felt like forever until we reached the trail. Halfway to the vehicle, Dan grimaced with each step. When we got to the car, he was in no condition to drive. I drove him to the hospital 5 miles away and ran every red light. Dan had to have stitches, and he was there for 6 hours or so before he went home. He had to tell a fabricated tale to his parents about how it was a rough skateboarding accident. Although Dan was unable to walk for a significant period, he still had dreams of being a rock star one day, so we maintained a diligent rehearsal routine. One evening after a horrendous session, Dan told me he wanted to see something. He slipped a hand under his chair and pulled out a hardcover book. It was dusty, and the title was illegible underneath the grime buildup over decades. "This volume is all about traveling circuses," he said. "There's a brief chapter where they cover this county. A ringleader named Tex Kara found a consistent audience here. He decided to make it a permanent residency in this town. It is horrifying how he treated animals at the time. They got shocked and whipped. Those descriptions made me want to become a vegetarian." I nodded and stared at the thick stack of pages between the covers. "Back in the day, there was no such thing as the Animal Welfare Act," Dan said as he opened the tome. "The place we visited was more than a theme park. It was a circus that was later converted to be family-friendly fairgrounds, like Six Flags." The book had a description of a gigantic wolf Tex kept in his main attraction. "No one could explain the size of the beast. It's written off as a folktale. There were so many witnessed accounts that historians are a bit baffled. There was no black and white photos taken at the time. All we have are primal drawings. Take a look." I gazed at the sketch in the middle of the book. Eyes identical to the ones we had seen were on the page. A giant wolf who lived longer than most human beings resided in a cave on the outskirts of my town did not make any sense. Not to me. I believed what we had encountered that day was some kind of vicious animal. We should feel lucky we were not hurt far worse. Whenever I hike near that area, I hear growls in the distance. I went to Joshua Tree a few days ago in an Airbnb with three of my friends. The house was a nice size and had to be accessed by an unpaved dirt road. The closest house to us was maybe a mile away. All houses in this area have private driveways too. On one of our drives back from getting groceries, I had saw a small animal run away from our headlights super fast, but I couldn't make it out. I assumed it to be a deer or something because of how big it was, but all I had seen in the desert were quails. No big animals. That night, I had a dream that my friends and I were searching for something and we were taken to a basement full of things and there was a small house with a red door. We went inside, but I don't remember what was there. This may or may not have anything to do with my experience, but I read here that dreams do have a correlation. One of the nights of our stay, we had a bonfire and did some stargazing. I had to pee at one point, so I went inside. It was gone for maybe 5 minutes. When my friend and I came back, my other two friends weren't sitting by the fire. I just sat there and waited a couple of minutes for them to come back, but ended up going inside to check for them, but they weren't there. We went back out and started calling for them and got no response. Instead, we hear coughing close to the right side of the house where the pool was. We immediately knew it was our friend because he had been kind of reserved. Our first instinct was to find them and help. At some points of the trip, we had gotten concerned if they were sick or something, but they ended up feeling a lot better. We start to go looking for them by the pool, but when we call again, and in response, we just hear the same exact cough, same pitch. It was the same cough maybe 4 or 5 times. We thought our friend was throwing up or maybe smoking. Usually, when we called for them, they'd answer immediately, except for this time, there was just more coughing. The last time we called, they had finally answered, and started coming from the opposite side of the house, and the sounds of them walking and talking came from the left side of the house just seconds after hearing them cough on the right side, and they were completely oblivious to everything that was happening. They had no idea about the coughing, and didn't even hear us calling until they had gotten closer to the house. As soon as I realized the coughing was a lure for us, it confirmed that something was keeping an eye on us. Based off what I've read, I'm very sure I had a skinwalker experience. I'll answer any questions. I also need to know if I need to get cleansed. So this story is from a few years ago, but me and my mother remember every single detail of what happened, but I would like some advice. So when I was in the 7th or 8th grade, me and my mom were driving home from a therapy appointment of mine. Note, nothing for anything psychotic, just depression and such. It was winter, and a full moon because I remember the snow glowing under the moon. It was only 6, but really dark out because, you know, it's in the middle of winter. So we were going about 55 miles per hour when this thing crosses and stops in front of us. The only way I could describe it is that if you had combined a deer, a dog, and a human. It stood about as tall as our windshield. It had the legs of what I could only describe as a deer. Its back was hunched over and walking on all fours. It had a head of a dog. Note, it didn't have ears or a dog snout, but its eyes were white and it didn't have a tail. The freakish thing about this creature was its skin. It wasn't a canine with mange or anything. It had actual human skin all the way down its legs, too long to be a dog's. It smelt of rotting meat, and some parts of the flesh was broken open like if you would scrape your knee. It was pale white and you could see its veins. And this thing was fast, like it stood there and just ran across the road in the blink of an eye. Me and my mom had to pull over just to calm down. We both saw it. For some context, I live in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, where I have heard other people describe what I saw as a not deer, but it may be way more human than deer. Any suggestions? I felt I had to share this somewhere, so this will likely be my first and last Reddit post. Every year, my friends and I go on a week-long canoe trip in Algonquin Park, usually to drink and fish. This past summer, we had decided to stay at Tom Thompson Lake, if you know it, for our main site, which ended up being on an island in the middle of the lake. There were 6 of us in total, with one group of 4 in a large tent, one guy in a solo tent, and myself in a hammock between them. One night, we had been huddled around the fire at about 1 a.m., when we noticed a flare in the sky over what we assumed was an adjacent lake. We didn't think much of it until an awful scream came across the lake about 20 minutes later. I was the only one left sober at the time, and there wasn't much we could do, so we assumed it was the problem bear in the area we had been warned of at the outfitters. The strange part came after everyone had gone to bed. At 4 a.m., the other 5 guys went to their tents and passed out, while I laid in my hammock listening to them fall asleep. For reference, the group of 4 were about 30 feet to my right, and the other guy about 100 feet to my left on the far shore. As I watched the stars and tried to will myself to sleep, I noticed everything had gone incredibly silent. Suddenly, feeling creeped out, I slowed my breathing and stayed as still as I could, thinking about the possible bear and how I was a neatly wrapped meat sack hanging there. Then, I heard a voice call out about 20 feet to my left by the remains of our fire. It was the voice of my friend Seamus, who was one of the guys who had passed out in the large tent. Four hellos, with each one sounding more emotionless. Hello? 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 All said within maybe 6 seconds. Although I immediately recognized his voice, every instinct I had was on alert, telling me not to respond. I stayed as quiet as a corpse for the next 5 minutes, listening for any movement until I felt the tension leave the air. It disturbed me to know how normally you could hear every movement in the site, and yet I heard absolutely nothing. The next morning, everyone told me they had heard nothing, but we all agreed to move sites early, since we all had gotten an eerie vibe from that night. This was our 6th trip to Algonquin, and we've never had any creepy experiences before. I hope that what I heard that night was a camper, with the identical voice of my friend, who had come to see if the site was free, or Seamus had somehow stealthily slept walk out of his tent, but neither seems possible. I am 100% I would have heard them moving. Anyways, I can only hope that nothing happens on future trips, but it will be very hard to forget the fear of that evening.